Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Move Forward Radio, brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association. Here you will learn how physical therapists can help people of all ages and abilities reduce pain and improve and restore motion to achieve long-term quality of life.
And good evening and welcome to Move Forward Blog Talk Radio. My name is Debbie Myers, and it's my pleasure to host today's program on women's health. It's National Women's Health Week, and during this week, the American Physical Therapy Association is building awareness on women's health issues that can be prevented and treated by a physical therapist. Our goal is to get women talking. So in addition to this program tonight, APTA is also hosting a simultaneous Twitter party and encouraging women to share their stories and to ask questions and using the hashtag overshare, because we really can't overshare enough information. So if you are on Twitter, please feel free to tweet us at MoveForwardPT and use the hashtag overshare. You know, many women think that the issues they experience during pregnancy, after pregnancy, during menopause, or just in life are a fact of life or nuisances we just have to deal with. Tonight, my guests are going to share with us that that does not necessarily have to be the case. I'm thrilled that we have three experts in women's health joining us who I know you'll really enjoy hearing from and talking to. Our first guest is Dr. Pamela Downey. Dr. Downey is a doctor of physical therapy and a board-certified women's health specialist, and we'll be hearing more about that specialty. She's also an adjunct professor at the University of Miami. Dr. Downey, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Debbie.
Our second guest is Dr. Rebecca Stevenson. Dr. Stevenson is also a doctor of physical therapy and is board-certified in women's health. She's also the author of a textbook for healthcare professionals called Obstetric and Gynecologic Care in Physical Therapy. Welcome, Dr. Stevenson.
Thank you, Debbie. Happy to be here.
And finally, I'm pleased to also have with us Dr. Judith Reichman. Dr. Reichman is a gynecologist and the author of the book Slow Your Clock Down, The Complete Guide to a Healthy Younger You. Dr. Reichman, it's a pleasure to have you join us.
Thank you very much, Debbie. It's my pleasure to be here.
So we have a lot to talk about tonight. A little later on in the program, we will be taking your questions. And if you have a question for our guests, you can reach us at 646-564-9841. And I will repeat that number several times during the evening. You can also send us a question through Twitter at MoveForwardPT. And the hashtag is overshare. And one other note, and I will repeat this several times, we have wonderful information available for you on moveforwardpt.com/womenshealth. So please go to our website and get that additional information. So let's begin our conversation first with Dr. Downey. Dr. Downey, as I mentioned, it's National Women's Health Week, and it's a great opportunity to open a dialogue about women's health issues. How do women need to think differently about their health?
Well, the most important thing is that they can be proactive in their own health care, and they can ask the question to their health care provider, and if there's something that's really pressing and they're not getting an answer, they can go and do a little research, talk with friends and family, and get to a person that will understand the complaint they're having. Because often women feel isolated when it comes to women's health issues. Private pain, we call it, or problems with your hormones. You don't want to really share that with just about anyone. But we really encourage to open up a dialogue with friends, family, and most importantly, your healthcare provider, so that you can get the information you need to get well.
You know, are there uniquenesses to women's health issues that we need to understand?
Well, often, for example, you know, I'm a physical therapist that underwent training to become a specialist and board certified. So that entailed a college degree, then on to grad school for 3 years. And then following that, we have a continuing education program through the American Physical Therapy Association and private sources like Herman Wallace to promote learning and understanding. So then these women, these physical therapists, can address some very specific complaints, such as pelvic pain, problems around pain with pregnancy and childbirth, and the issues of the life change.
So it is, you know, women are unique in the fact that we, our reproductive system is, you know, guides a lot of who we are and what we are, and that therefore means there are some really kind of unique health issues related to that.
Oh, yes. You can have muscle spasms in the most unique of places that make life very uncomfortable. You can also have things that cause you to just feel very uncomfortable. There are young women, for example, that just wish that they can wear a tampon so they can go swimming during the summer, for example, that come into my practice. I was just speaking with a woman this week. Sarah has been for years unable to tolerate a gynecological exam because she has so much pain with entry of the speculum. So she was referred to me by her physician, and we talked about what the causes are, the pelvic floor muscles. Those are the hammock of muscles that go from the pubic bone to the tailbone at the pelvis. And we found that hers had a lot of tension in them. And when her attention was put on the fact of that these muscles have a contractile property and that she can relax them, we then had a strategy for homework and to create a condition in which she would be more relaxed and able to then tolerate a lot more comfort during exam, tampon use, and eventually with sex. So that was something that was really important to her. And we were able to really go to that question. Those are personal questions that a lot of people don't feel they can ask someone.
You know, that's really interesting. And I think, you know, a lot of women may not realize that, first of all, that physical therapy is an option for them with certain issues like this, let alone that they're actually physical therapists trained specifically in women's health. How can women expect to work with a physical therapist as it relates to women's health issues?
Well, often they're referred by their healthcare professional, or they can come right to a physical therapist. We have a section website where you can find a women's health specialist and right in your own neighborhood. And it's a private setting. We treat patients one-on-one. And we sit down, we have an initial evaluation where we hear the whole patient history, and we can then identify problems and then develop a plan of care that can then meet their needs so that they are functional goals and things that they would like to do, often using exercise and very proactive health-related activities.
And you mentioned just some of the qualifications, sort of the added education required to be board certified in women's health. How are physical therapists specifically trained to address women's health issues?
Well, after graduating from PT school, and even within PT school, all physical therapists get an introduction to the women's health lifespan. Following graduation, those physical therapists that are interested in this specialty area, which is just a dynamite specialty area, I can tell you, I've met such great people, you can then take continuing education courses and through self-study, mentorship with other professionals, being in your physical therapy association, you go on to learn the techniques that are very specific to being a women's health physical therapist. And then you can also become credentialed by taking a board exam, which is a nationally given exam with, you know, minimum competencies. So if you're coming to a PT with that women's health credential in board certification, you know that she's really done her homework.
That's really great to know. And I imagine people can go to moveforwardpt.com and find out specifically where to find a board-certified women's health physical therapist, perhaps in their area or nearby.
Yep, absolutely. And the overwhelming comment I know that myself and I'm sure Rebecca can speak to is that patients say to us, you really are listening to what I'm saying to you. So I think it's that lost art of communication, one-on-one, dealing with a very private issue, often for most people, where they can not feel so isolated. And when they realize that many other people have the same condition that they have and that they don't have to live with this condition, it really just sets the tone for positive recovery right from the get-go.
So let's talk about one of those really private issues, incontinence. You know, many women think there's nothing you can do about incontinence. I know I was brought up to think I had big babies and it was just a fact of life, that it's something I should probably expect to have. You know, is it a normal part of life and aging, and what can be done to address it?
Well, I think that is like an old wives' tale, that if your mom had incontinence or losing her water at a certain age, that we're all destined to the same thing over and over, generation after generation. But really, the research shows, and physical therapy has a great body of research that shows that it works well in alleviating incontinence in women. It's just a matter of dialing in to what muscles need to be strengthened or need to be used properly to really alleviate the symptoms of incontinence. And that doesn't mean you need to always take a medication. So fitness with the pelvic floor muscles and also the abdominals really will play a part in improving incontinence, and we have a very high success rate. The research shows that up to 85% of women can improve their stress urinary incontinence. And what I mean by stress urinary incontinence is when you laugh or cough or sneeze, you lose a little urine. So that's an incredibly high cure rate for just dialing into a set of pelvic floor muscles and knowing when to use them and how to use them correctly.
So is that where the Kegel or Kegel, however it's pronounced, it comes in, and what should women know about that?
Well, the Kegel or Kegel exercise is definitely the key to preventing that urine loss, but often women don't know where those muscles are. So going to a trained physical therapist who can then do an internal exam and help you identify those muscles, you learn how to squeeze properly. A lot of women push instead of squeeze to close those muscles, which actually makes the problem worse. The research shows that 40% of women get it wrong when they're given a sheet of these Kegel exercises in the healthcare provider's office. So it's really important that we make the mind-body connection and are able to get them to isolate and do the exercises properly.
You know, and you've talked about incontinence. Another topic that has gotten a lot of attention, I know Good Housekeeping wrote about it recently, is overactive bladder. You know, how can women address this particular issue, and how is that related to incontinence?
Well, overactive bladder is a specific condition when the bladder just contracts inadvertently, expelling the urine when normally the woman would not want that to happen, resulting in that terrible incontinent episode, which can be very, very embarrassing. So overactive bladder can be addressed with finding out what the circumstances are around it. Often women are drinking a lot of caffeine or sugared sodas, a lot of citrus, a lot of unhealthy things that can exacerbate their problem, as well as doing the wrong kinds of things, things that we may have learned along the way. Oh, go empty your bladder before you get in the car. Oh, we're leaving here now, so go to the bathroom again. We get in these habits of frequency. So if we can just get back to what the body is best at doing, going back to homeostasis, and take out all these factors of bladder irritants and our bad behavior, so to speak, and then reinforce it with good exercise and behavior modification. Often overactive bladder is a condition that can be improved in as little as 4 months, and
wow,
you won't have to rely so much on medication and paper products, which can be very, very expensive. And physical therapists do get this training, and it's not rocket science, as we say. It's really putting all the pieces together.
And that's really good news for women, because you really don't want to have to rely on medicine. That's something maybe you could actually, with your own help and the help of your physical therapist, make a real difference in that affects your whole lifestyle.
Yes.
We are currently talking to Dr. Pamela Downey. Dr. Downey is a doctor of physical therapy, board certified in women's health, as a women's health specialist. And Dr. Downey, if you would hang on the line, I'd like to now bring into the conversation Dr. Rebecca Stevenson, also doctor of physical therapy and board certified in women's health. Dr. Stevenson, how are you tonight?
I'm great and very happy to have this conversation.
It is a great conversation. We're really talking about, you know, some of the issues that women just, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, sometimes think they just have to live with. You know, let's go back to maybe earlier than in a lifespan than those who are maybe experiencing some issues of incontinence to those who are maybe having some of the changes through pregnancy. You know, the body, I'm sure, undergoes many changes through pregnancy, and women are getting more educated about that before childbirth. What can women expect during their pregnancy?
Yeah, Debbie, there's almost no system that doesn't change during pregnancy. There's some very dramatic ones. Her blood volume will increase by 50%, so that means that her heart has to pump more fluid. Her rib cage will expand, so she'll have some different respiration kind of considerations. Her endocrine or hormonal system will change, and that supports the pregnancy, but it also has sometimes the effect of widening the pelvis a little bit so that the birth of the child is much easier. So if there's a little bit more laxity in the pelvis, she may end up having some problems during pregnancy or after delivery because there's been a stretch on those ligaments. The intestinal system slows down in pregnancy, so she may be more likely to have some constipation. So she needs to keep her water fluid up and to have more high-fiber kinds of things in her diet. And, of course, the metabolic changes that we all know, she's going to gain 20, maybe 35 pounds. So to gain that much weight in a period of 9 months is going to have some posture ramifications. Her breasts will increase in size, filling with milk so that she'll be able to support nursing. So all of those contribute to some potential posture changes.
You know, both of my daughters are pregnant right now, and I don't know how many times they remind their husband, you go try walking around all day with a 30-pound ball attached to you, to the front of you. It definitely is quite a change. You know, one of the things that they are experiencing and that I hear so many pregnant women experiencing is back pain. Is that just inevitable?
Well, it's very common, and it's 20 to even reported incidences of 74% of women will have back pain. And if she has back pain in one pregnancy, she's much more likely to have it in subsequent pregnancies. Women, I think, are very affected by the back pain in pregnancy because they sort of put up with it. And that was actually one of the reasons that I got into this specialty, is because the orthopedic surgeons really didn't know what to do. They knew that pregnancy, at the end of pregnancy, she more likely would be better, but we're really the profession that is the one that can analyze the posture, give her the corrective exercises, and evaluate her muscular system. Maybe she's got a separation of her abdominal muscles, which happens frequently, 27% of times in pregnancy. So she may have a separation in the front, so she's not able to hold her carriage as well, and she needs some restorative exercises, or she may need a slight brace to help her during that time. So it's not, it doesn't have to be, and I think that that's one of the many types of patients that we see. I've seen many women early on in pregnancy when they really haven't gained much weight, but they have this instability and they get caught in one position and they just need a little bit of treatment and some education on posture and how to bend and lift to protect their back. And then, of course, there's women later on in pregnancy who, because they may have multiples and they're quite large, they need other strategies so that when they're bending and lifting, they're not injuring themselves. And even in the postpartum period, we train both the mother and the other caretakers on how to bend and lift, because there's the baby carriers, the strollers, all of those repeated movements can, everybody can end up with back pain.
Hmm. You know, I want to talk about some of the restrictions or processes women can take to exercise, but I'm gathering you would say that physical fitness is important during pregnancy. How does physical fitness help women through pregnancy?
Well, yeah, it certainly helps them with oxygenating their body. It makes them feel better because of the endorphins and enkephalins that are, you know, those chemicals that are produced in our body that make us feel better. And it also prepares her for labor and delivery. There are some things that she should avoid. She shouldn't be lying on her stomach later on in pregnancy, or doing inverted positions, or maybe movements that involve sharp, sudden twists where she may irritate any instability that she has. And we try to caution people not to be lying on their back for more than 3 minutes after their fourth month of pregnancy, and that's a restriction that the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has put out. And the reason is because with the expanding uterus and the amniotic fluid in the baby, that she can put pressure on those vessels that are up and down her spine, and she may feel faint when she's in fact lying on her back, which wouldn't be a common occurrence, but can happen just because of the pressure on those vessels. So she can lie on her back for up to 3 minutes and then roll to her left or right side and do some other kind of exercises and then roll back to her back and do some more things for 3 minutes. You can actually do quite a bit in 3 minutes, but so that you don't linger there.
So you don't have to give up maybe some of your favorite kind of exercises that do require laying on your back. It's just don't stay there for a long time.
Right, exactly. We really want women to do what they like. They may be doing Pilates and yoga, but all good yoga and Pilates teachers know that there are a couple of positions that are not really for pregnancy. But they're wonderful ways to keep her toned, because she is going to be lifting a wee one afterwards, and she's going to need her strength for that, and that'll keep her strong and also help her with the long process of labor and delivery.
You know, I've heard a lot about core strength, and sometimes it's confusing between core strength and abdominal strength, but how important is core strength or abdominal strength after pregnancy?
Yeah, and you know, I can make it very simple. There's four parts to core strength. It's the pelvic floor at the bottom, mm-hmm. and then at the top is the respiratory diaphragm, and then in the front and along the sides are the abdominal muscles, and then the back muscles in the back. So if you imagine that like a sphere or the core, those are all of the muscles that work really well together, and that's what we strengthen as physical therapists. So if you take a deep breath and hold it and then lift something, you're actually straining on the pelvic floor. So the strategies that we show women is how to bend and move and keeping their airway open so they're not bulging out the pelvic floor. And so this is sort of thematic to all of what we do as women's health practitioners, is teaching men and also, you know, women how to move so that they're not bearing down on their pelvic floor.
So that really then, you know, conveys to what we were talking about earlier about incontinence too. It's all kind of connected there.
Yeah.
In terms, okay.
And definitely, because she can become incontinent during pregnancy, she's going to have some urinary changes because the kidneys have to filter more fluid. So she may have periods of time where she has to void more, but she doesn't necessarily have to be incontinent. Certainly there's pressure from the expanding uterus onto the bladder. It sits sort of right on top of it. and so she may feel like she has to void more often. I know some women feel like they have to void on the first floor, ride the elevator up, and two floors they've got to go again after pregnancy. But I think if she keeps her pelvic floor toned and strong and pays attention to the body and how she's moving and lifting, it can avoid a lot of the strain on the pelvic floor. And we would recommend that if she has a normal pelvic floor, she doesn't have any dysfunction, that she can do those pelvic floor or Kegel exercises throughout the pregnancy. It actually helps to keep the perineum very pliable.
Are there any, you mentioned dysfunctions, pelvic floor dysfunctions, and I don't want you to get into the whole science of that, but is there anything that is kind of abnormal that women might be needing to think about?
Well, this is what Dr. Downey was speaking of, women that have pelvic pain or interstitial cystitis, or they may have problems with a speculum. They have maybe more increased tone in the pelvic floor. So we would teach them how to relax the pelvic floor before we taught them how to coordinate it. A lot of it's the coordination. And that's, I think, what physical therapists are really attuned to doing is the neuromuscular reeducation and the coordination of muscles and how they work and interface together.
You know, in talking about pregnancy, women really want to return to normal activity and to exercise, sometimes pretty quickly after childbirth, try to get their shape back. What should women take into consideration when they are returning to activity after childbirth?
Well, basically they've gone through a major marathon. They've gained 35 pounds in 9 months, and now they've lost most of it, not all of it, postpartum. And they're nursing, so they need an extra 500 calories a day in order to have enough calories to nurse. And she needs to really think about her energy level. Maybe she's not the one to actually do the laundry. Maybe somebody else could. And she needs to attend to the baby and all the care of the baby, as well as restoring herself. So rest, some exercise, work within her restrictions. She is going to bleed vaginally for about 6 weeks, and that's because the placenta was inside the uterus, and it's pulled away from the uterine wall, and those vessels have to close down over 6 months. So often she'll go on a walk, and she maybe went too far, and she'll notice that that was a little increased bleeding. So those are some of the restrictions that her OB practitioner would certainly go over with her. But she, if it's been a pregnancy that has gone fairly well and she hasn't had any major problems, then most OB practitioners would have them starting doing exercises, certainly their pelvic floor exercises, as well as walking and gentle strengthening.
That's great, and that's probably a good transition to soon introduce our third guest for this evening. We've been talking to Dr. Rebecca Stevenson, as a doctor of physical therapy and board certified in women's health. And Dr. Stevenson, I'd like you to also stay on the line,
and we'll
have you rejoin the conversation soon. And before I introduce our third guest, I want to remind everybody, if you do have a question, please feel free to give us a call at 646-564-9841. We will be taking your phone calls after a bit. And we are also following your questions on Twitter, so send us a tweet at MoveForwardPT, hashtag Overshare. So at this time, I'd like to have Dr. Judith Reichman join our conversation. Dr. Reichman is a gynecologist and author of the book Slow Your Clock Down, The Complete Guide to a Healthy Younger You. And Dr. Reichman, it's nice to have you with us today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
So we've been talking a lot about issues related to pregnancy and post-pregnancy. In your book, Slow Your Clock Down, what are the women's health issues women need to think about as they age?
Well, certainly after pregnancy, all women have to realize that there's a weight issue. And one of the biggest medical problems we're seeing today in women as well as in men is the obesity epidemic. Women tend to gain weight and keep it on. They have gained between 25 and 35 pounds. We certainly don't want them to gain more. And on average, Women tend to keep about 8 of those pounds on unless they're really making an effort postpartum. And exercise, not just to keep the pelvic muscles toned, but aerobic exercise that's going to allow them to lose the weight and also feel healthier, stay younger looking, younger feeling, have energy. It shouldn't affect lactation, is something that we're really stressing. If the woman stays with that weight gain for more than 6 months to a year, chances are she won't lose it. And then when she has subsequent pregnancies, she'll gain another 8 pounds and another 8 pounds. And what we're seeing is that all of a sudden at the age of 50, women are 20 pounds, 30 pounds over the weight they were when they were 30. And that's going to be an issue that they're going to have to deal with and will lead to early onset of diabetes, coronary vascular disease, and a lot of other health issues, and quite frankly, decrease their longevity. So one of the things I stress in my patients when they do come back from having a baby is exercise. And we all know that if a woman breastfeeds, she's more likely to lose the weight than if she doesn't. And obviously breastfeeding is the healthiest way to take care of a newborn. And we do hope that most women will exclusively breastfeed for 6 months, and then they can slowly introduce food, but perhaps breastfeeding for a year would be the ideal way to do it. The other thing that we see a lot postpartum is thyroid issues. Often women get a thyroiditis subsequent to having their babies, and they may start to complain that either they're very nervous or that they're very lethargic. So very many many doctors will go and check their thyroid function. This is usually not a long-term issue, but if there is a thyroid change, it has to be addressed, and often we will use medication. The other thing that I talk to women about as they go through that period of time in their late 30s, their 40s, prior to entering menopause, which is average age 51, are the changes that occur with cycles. And often we see these perimenopausal changes about 2 years prior to the onset of menopause. And cycles may come closer together. Sometimes there'll be a missed cycle. Some women feel that they're having hot flashes and night sweats. They may feel more lethargic. They may not be sleeping as well. And this is something that they need to address with their physician. Often we do consider using even low-dose birth control pills, not for birth control, but to get the cycles regulated through mm-hmm. the perimenopausal period. And again, this is a time when I tell every woman, exercise, knowing your body, using your muscles, is tantamount to health. There is no medication that I can give a woman as she goes through her 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s that will approximate what exercise will do for her.
You know, that's good news. I was listening to you and thinking how exhausting it is to be a woman. And I would like to think that those who are in their 50s and have put on all of those extra pounds, that there is still some hope. You know, what are some strategies for trying to maybe get yourself back on track and slow down your clock and feel younger?
Well, then we get into the whole issue of what happens in menopause. And is the weight gain that often we see as a woman goes through the transition from her lack of estrogen, or is it from aging, or is it that she's exercising less, or there's a redeposition of fat cells? And it's probably a combination of all these. We do find that women in the menopause do not do the same type of aerobic exercise that they were getting when they were younger. There tends to be a change in basal body metabolism, and for every decade that we age, there's a decrease of 5%. What that means is it's about 100 calories a day. So unless we eat 100 calories a day less, or we exercise 100 to burn those extra 100 calories, we will gain between 8 and 10 pounds a decade, and that adds up. So when a woman comes to me at 40 and says, you know, I'm eating just what I ate, you know, 10 years ago, but I'm gaining weight, I explain that it is the basal body metabolism and she has to do something. And there isn't a pill that I'm going to give her. It's something that either has to do with her nutrition, her caloric intake, or her exercise. She's got to either burn it or have less of it. And there's no getting away with it. And when a woman is severely overweight, Certainly we want her to begin an exercise program, diet modification. And in some cases today, especially if she's developed diabetes or we think she's got onset of early diabetes, we're looking at bariatric surgery and we're seeing some amazing results. But that's not the first thing I tell a patient who's overweight. I don't send her to a surgeon to have bariatric surgery. But it is becoming more and more of a positive part of our armamentarium when we're taking care of obese women.
And it really is about getting that weight off, I imagine, and getting into some kind of a routine of physical fitness, no matter what your age is.
Absolutely. And I see my patients in their 70s and 80s, and the ones who are out there and they're playing golf and they're driving their car and they're completely independent are the women who have exercised most of their lives. Now, if you haven't done it, it's never too late to start, but obviously you have to start with a slow program where you're going to use your muscles carefully, you're not going to overstrain, and this is where a physical therapist might definitely be helpful, because a lot of women become weekend warriors, and those are the women who are going to be injured. And so they really have to know what to do and how to do it and gradually increase their activity.
We have a number of people starting to call in, but before I do go to some of our caller questions, Dr. Eichmann, I wanted to ask you about bone health, because I know that some of the medications that are out there for bone health have been getting some publicity now about whether they're, you know, really doing the job they need to do. But bone health is a real issue for women, and no matter what their age, what can be done to build healthy bones and try to prevent that osteoporosis?
Well, we have to realize that low bone density is going to occur in over 20 million American women, and at least half of them will actually have osteoporosis. They're very high risk for fracture, and the fracture can occur with minimal trauma. And the fracture that we're most concerned about is hip fracture, because if a woman fractures her hip, especially if she's menopausal, she's likely to die. 20% of these women will die within a year, and 50% will never walk unaided again. It is one of the major causes of entrance into nursing homes, that plus urinary incontinence. I always advise my patients, and certainly I think every woman should be advised to take calcium. Now, when children are young, they're building their bones, and they need to have milk. And if they're not having milk products, then their parents have to make sure that they get calcium either through soy sauce, soy milk, or through supplements. But by the time a woman reaches her reproductive years, she should be getting about 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. And she can build bone until she's 30. Subsequent to the age of 30, she can only maintain bone, and generally speaking, we start to lose it. I always tell women there are bone filling cells and bone drilling cells. Hmm. And the filling is better than the drilling till 30 if we take in the mortar we need, which is the calcium, and we get the vitamin D. After the age of 30, the drilling can overtake the filling, and when osteopenia or osteoporosis becomes severe, then we have way more drilling than filling, and we get those little holes that make the bone porous and hence less strong. So I feel every woman should be getting 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. Once she becomes menopausal, it probably should be 1,200 milligrams. I tell every woman that she can't take it all at once unless it's a slow-release product. She needs to take it 500 or 600 milligrams at a time. And then she also needs vitamin D. The current recommendation is to get at least 400 units of vitamin D. For that, you have to lie out in the sun for about 10 minutes three times a week in a place where you've got good sunlight. But I also think that women should be taking vitamin D, because most of us don't want to be out in the sun. When we talk about staying young, we don't want to get the aging that sun causes to our skin, nor do we want to get skin cancer. So I advise my patients to take between 400 and 1,000 units of vitamin D a day. And I'm not a big vitamin believer. The only thing I tell my patients to do is take the calcium and D and then once they're 65, I do bone densities. If they smoked or they had they were alcoholics or they took certain medications or they were on steroids, I do bone densities at a younger age. And if indeed I see severe osteopenia, and certainly if I see osteoporosis, I generally use one of the medications that are out there. Most of the medications are going to be fine for 5 years. We then have the patient do what we call a drug holiday. I know that sounds like something absolutely opposite, but for us the drug holiday means that she's off the medication for a year, and then we reevaluate her bone density, and then we might put her back on for another number of years.
Great. That's really helpful advice, Dr. Reichman. We are talking currently with Dr. Judith Reichman, a gynecologist, author of the book Slow Your Clock Down, The Complete Guide to a Healthy Younger You. And at this time, I'd like to bring back into the conversation Dr. Pamela Downey and Dr. Rebecca Stevenson. Both are doctors of physical therapy and are board-certified women's health specialists. And also at this time, we're going to go to the phone line, and we have Veronica calling in from Los Angeles with a question regarding ACL injuries in women. Veronica, are you
Hi.
On the line with us?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Fine, thank you. What's your question?
I have heard that women are more likely to have ACL injuries. I was wondering why that is and how can that be prevented?
Dr. Stevenson, I can answer part of that. One of the things that happens with women is they have wider hips, so the angle from the inside of the knee to the hip is at a larger angle than in males, so that some of the stresses that might happen with a high-impact sport make the ACL more vulnerable. So part of what's needed for athletes that are in more, say, soccer, lacrosse, activities like that where there's stopping and starting is that they need training in that activity so that they can develop the musculature around it to support the ACL better.
Great. We have another question from Janet from Texas, who wasn't able to stay on the line, but I will ask her question. And maybe, Dr. Reichman, this is for you first, but does lymphedema worsen with age, and does swelling get worse?
Well, the worst lymphedema that women experience is often after they've had breast cancer surgery, and the nodes in the arm are removed, and as a result, the lymph can't be drained back into the system, and they get lymphedema of their arms. When a woman comes in and she says, I have lymphedema in my legs, there are medical conditions that can cause that, but often what she thinks is lymphedema is swelling, and the swelling has to do with lack of blood flow back to her heart, the venous blood flow, and it could be a sign of anything from some heart failure to overuse of salt and storing of fluids. Much of the lymphedema can be addressed both by making the right medical assessment, but also these women that have lymphedema in their legs often are not the women that are exercising. They need to do some exercise. Often they're overweight. So you sort of have to address the entire problem rather than just, oh, my legs get puffy and what should I do? And the easy way that some women want of taking a diuretic is not the way to go.
Yeah, and
another way to think about it, too, is that a physical therapist is the perfect person to help someone with lymphedema because they're trained in techniques to eliminate the fluid buildup with short stretch bandages and also exercise that within as little as a month's time you can restore the normal look and feel to the limb. And guidelines have changed for concerning exercise for those women that have had breast cancer with lymph node removal and have risk for lymphedema. So women are encouraged now to exercise. They were thought to be on a more sedentary path, but now they're finding that these women do just as well with exercise, and the health benefits to all their other organ systems are incredibly well received, from the cardiovascular to venous return to general health.
In general, we see that women who exercise who have had a diagnosis of breast cancer will do better than sedentary women. And women who are obese and don't lose the weight and they've had breast cancer will not do as well as women who are thinner and are the exercisers. So, again, exercise comes into not only preventing disease, but it comes into helping prevent recurrences of the disease.
Absolutely, yes. And Dr. Reichman has really put that point forward, is exercise is really not contraindicated at any point in our lives and can help practically any problem that we're having, from insomnia, depression, to restoring an ACL injury, to the facts of women's health. And we don't usually think about women's health problems as being something that we can exercise through, but the pelvic floor muscles benefit. Postpartum, you would benefit, and through menopause, you will also benefit from the side effects or the ill effects of maybe certain problems that you're experiencing with doing gentle, easy exercise that can be done in small doses on a daily basis. And that's the thing that I stress to my patients, is you don't have to go to the gym. You can actually do this exercise in a very easy and attractive way. Do something that's fun, that makes you want to do it every day, and then it becomes a part of your routine. Maybe you become it becomes part of a hobby, and you gain friendships through that. It's social. It's great for our elders. It gets them out of the house, and it's really something that can really add years to your life.
What I always tell patients is that if it's not one of the first three priorities of the day, you won't get to it. So it has to be at least number three.
Yeah,
and
it really
just,
sounds
and it can even be just taking a brisk walk for 30 minutes most every day.
It really does sound like the best medicine. We have another question from a caller, Carlene from Connecticut. Carlene, what's your question?
Hi, good evening.
Evening.
Here's my question. Hi, I'm a physical therapist, and I'm very well aware of the benefits for physical therapy in women's health. Here's my struggle. I'm always at the supermarket, at the pharmacy, and I see the purchases of these women, and it's such an embarrassing topic. So here's my question. How should I, and even should I, address these women to get them to the doctor or to their physical therapist?
Are you talking about, Carlene, the Poise pads that they're buying in the grocery store?
You got it, or even the period pads. You know, they are embarrassed. They're hiding their product.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to follow them out of the store. So what is driving those women to the clinic, and what got them there in the first place?
Yeah, you know, 70%, we know that 70% of women who have urinary incontinence don't go to a doctor and don't address it, and they just deal with it themselves. The other thing that I think has to be mentioned is that the sanitary napkins that are for blood do not work for loss of urine. That's
right.
Number one. And number two, yes, the physical therapist and the doctor has to be involved in their care. But if you just see someone in a drugstore going up to her and saying, well, I really think instead of buying this, you should go see a physician, I think we're beyond the bounds of privacy at that point.
Yeah, you know,
I
grow concerned
that
the ads on TV show younger and younger women that are promoting the use of incontinence pads. So, Carlene, I think what you could do is to contact all your women's groups that you know, maybe at your church, synagogue, community, in the library, and sponsor having a physical therapist come and talk about incontinence. Because I've done that at my church, and it's so surprising how many women don't actually know the anatomy of it. So that would be a grassroots way of educating the public within your community, and you know, promoting it with a little placard at the grocery store. But I think forums like this are exactly what we're trying to do, is to educate women as to, you don't have to have pelvic pain, you don't have to have incontinence, and here's what you can do about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carlene, for your call. And I think, you know, it does point to the point that this education is so important. Women are often making decisions based on just not having good information. So listening to programs like we have tonight, oversharing information, talking to your healthcare professional is just really critical, at no matter what stage you are in your lifespan as a woman. We have another question from Joy in San Diego. Joy has a question about pregnancy. Joy?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. My question is, if having a baby is on my radar in the next few years, what are some things that I could do now to prepare for that?
Yeah, you can make sure that your nutrition is good, that you've spoken to your OB practitioner or gynecologist if you need to be on any vitamins prior to becoming pregnant, and you could certainly do your pelvic floor exercises. You want to have a strong abdomen and take any care of any musculoskeletal problems that you might have right now.
I would also add that you should look at your family history if there are any issues that could be raised that have a genetic problem, that you should talk to your gynecologist prior to getting pregnant. We want most women to have a preconception visit to go over factors such as a history of mental retardation, Down syndrome, multiple miscarriages, irregular cycles, and certainly we want everyone on folic acid, either nutritionally or with vitamin supplements, hopefully 3 months before they conceive.
And the other thing I would add is that now make exercise a habit, because once it's a habit, it then is easy to continue. A lot of women come to me, and we have a prenatal program here in Miami, and they want to start exercising after they're pregnant, and they've never been an exerciser before. So it's often harder to gain that fitness when you're at a very challenging time in your life, when you're gaining weight and there are all these changes going on hormonally with you and the focus is on the baby. But if you can take this time now to get into a good exercise habit in which a physical therapist can easily develop a nice home care plan in one or two visits and show you how to safely perform exercise and stretches that would be good for you, and in particular for an upcoming pregnancy, then you're in the habit already and it becomes just a part of your day, just as going to the regular checkup would be when you're pregnant.
Great. Great information. We have a question that's come in through Twitter, and I'll just open it up to the group. What are some of the best exercises for women who are beginners in strength training, and how does that help keep their bones healthy?
Well, I can take that question to start and turn it over to the group. But the trick is, with strength training, we want to have land-based exercise that creates forces going through our bones so that we are, as Dr. Reichman said, putting calcium to where it will do its most good, and the stresses on bones then react to create strong bones. So when you think about exercising, it's important to balance your aerobic as well as your weight training so that we can get the strong bones that we need to carry us through those menopausal years and into older age. So the key is to definitely mix in some exercise that creates maybe not the old-style 80s aerobics, which were a lot of pounding, but to have weight-bearing exercise as well as using your upper extremities to do that exercise as well. Core strengthening is the key word for the last few years, but when it comes down to it, a woman's health physical therapist has been talking about the core way long before that. Having a very strong inner abdominal muscle and pelvic floor is super important to keeping your back healthy, because a lot of people injure themselves when they do too much too fast. But you'd be surprised how simple basic movements can provide you with a lot of strengthening and a lot of value to your bones, muscles, and ligaments that can keep you healthy for a long time.
You know, and I think we have to make the point that early education of our healthcare providers and consumers to get women doing weight training and choosing an impact exercise early and taking in that adequate calcium early on is really some of where the chief determinants of bone quality is determined.
I usually ask my patients to start with aerobic exercise that could be even a light aerobic exercise, such as walking or swimming. But if we want to do other kinds of exercise that will help the bones, then they can start with light dumbbells. They can do bands. There's certainly yoga exercises that will help, as well as Pilates. So there's a lot of ways out there to do it. They can get books and read about using light weights. They can go to a gym, a good gym, and ask for an instructor for one or two lessons just to see what they can do. I even have patients who, when they travel, they do their upper body weights with filled Coke bottles. I mean, there are ways to, or with telephone books, there are ways to exercise your body and do it safely. You always start with the lower weights. You do as much as you feel comfortable with. 10 minutes three times a week usually suffices. And with time, women can build up to do more. But again, that weekend warrior situation is where they're going to be injured.
And there is a way to systematically increase your weights, but pretty much we'd like to recommend that people do 3 sets of 10 repetitions at a low weight. And then when they can do that and build that up to 12 repetitions, they can reduce the repetitions and add a pound. So they might start with 2 pounds and slowly work up to 12 repetitions times 3 sets. And then reduce that to 8 repetitions and add a pound so that you slowly can build this up. And this is true across women who have breast cancer. We find that slow and steady is the way to go. Research backs this up, and that it's the pull on the muscles, on the bones, that's really going to make for good bone health.
You know, I'd like a follow-up question. It is interesting. The theme, definitely, of the evening has been exercise. And I'm thinking of some of our listeners, though, that might be just kind of overwhelmed with that. Perhaps they are that 50-year-old who has allowed the 30 pounds to pile on and have not had exercise as part of their routine. Can you, from a professional standpoint, or just maybe even woman to woman, give some reassurance to women that it's not too late to start turning their lives around and including exercise in some meaningful way in their lives?
Yeah,
I always tell patients that if they just lose 10% of their weight, so if a woman is now 180 pounds and she loses 18 pounds, she will improve her health in a way that is almost as good as losing the 30 pounds to put on the size 10 dress. So we're not going big deductions. We're going 10% at a time, and it makes it much easier for a woman to focus on that 10% than, say, go wear the clothes that you used to wear when you were 30.
And I might add that when you exercise, the research is showing, and physical therapists are very well versed in this, that a little goes a long way. You don't have to have these max efforts of boot camp and CrossFit. And exercise doesn't have to be intimidating. It can just be as simple as that brisk walk and doing gentle exercise that is helpful. We have improvements at just doing 30% of what a muscle can do when it's exercising. 30% of effort is barely anything for the body, so anyone at any age can do very gentle exercises and not feel sore, because usually when you start an exercise program, the first 3 to 4 weeks, everyone is just so sore, and if you get that painful, you're not motivated to continue. So the key is to just pick something that you like to do, start out slowly, start with like small goals and move on from there. And then it becomes self-rewarding, because as you gain fitness, it becomes easier. Just getting started, making it a habit.
Well, those are certainly encouraging words. And I would like to thank each one of our guests tonight as we've been celebrating National Women's Health Week and talking about women's health issues and some of the positive things women can be doing to turn their lives around. We have been talking with Dr. Pamela Downey, a doctor of physical therapy, board-certified women's health specialist, and an adjunct professor at the University of Miami. Dr. Downey, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
We've also been talking to Dr. Rebecca Stevenson. Dr. Stevenson is a doctor of physical therapy and board certified in women's health. Dr. Stevenson, thank you, too, for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Debbie.
And finally, we've also been talking to Dr. Judith Reichman. Dr. Reichman's a gynecologist and author of the book Slow Your Clock Down, The Complete Guide to a Healthy Younger You. And you can learn more about that book, I'm sure, as well as connect with Dr. Reichman through judithreichman.net. Dr. Reichman, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you, Debbie.
And anyone who has additional information can go to moveforwardpt.com /women's health, and you can download the Women's Health e-book, Women's Health Across the Lifespan. Thank you all very much for joining us, and my name is Debbie Myers, and we will join you again.
Thank you for tuning in to Move Forward Radio. For more information and to find a physical therapist in your area, visit moveforwardpt.com.